You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. We got Niall.
How are ya?
And me, Dwayne. Brian cannot make it. He is not dying, he assures us. So I guess a little less Dynamite in the Brain this time, but hopefully we can fill in the gaps a little.
Yes. All of these two podcasts with using names that give no information about what we're actually about. We will take supremacy. We're taking the wheel this time.
And this week we're talking about the anime that aired from the 13th of October 2020 to the 18th of October the same year, because it's still that year. Goddamn, when will it stop being that year? Surely next year will be better. We say every year and it gets worse, but we'll see. Starting with the welcome return of Mr. Osamatsu Season 3, Episode 1. I think it doesn't have a title, does it?
Untitled. Probably because it's the episode where I think we're going to do a lot of copyright infringement, kind of like parody in this.
This might get pulled off the air again.
Or they expect it to. But the thing is, though, that's sort of it. That's kind of the premise of this almost. It's like, yes, we expect this to happen. But no, we've brought them back, but they're different. Well, Mr. Osamatsu is an anime that everyone remembers as being superb, harmless, even educational, great for the kids.
Ah, great for the whole family to enjoy. Clean family fun.
Yeah, because you know the guys, there's the parents in this. There's like six identical sextuplet brothers. Oh, they're these clean-cut, fine young boys. Aren't they great? Aren't they so lovely? Wait a minute. I don't remember this being my Osamatsu. What's going on right here? Oh, yeah. This were a whole new... What's it, Osamatsu?
You got these six brothers who are all lovely. They're all loving to each other. They're all kind and gentle and understanding to each other. Also, the girly Matsus are here, except they're aged down. And it's kind of like, hey, fucking we got gender equality. Also, we've got all the foreign Osamatsus who are somehow sextuplets. But also, each one is from a different country. And they're all sextuplets. They're three sets of sextuplets. That's not how that works. But I guess this show's really good for everyone now. And we cut to Osamatsu watching his family approve of these new brothers and sisters through the window, going like, the fuck?
We gotta tell the rest of the boys. Versus down to the konbini where they're doing the usual thing. Just
nothing.
Laying about. Nothing. On the phone, just folding up paper cats. It's like, lads, what's wrong with you? Oh, sure, since anime is over, we got nothing to fucking do. Sure, we got no jobs, no girlfriends, and like that. You know, we're just one same shitty old fucking dudes. You know. And they get kind of mired in that for a bit.
Like, even Osamatsu gets naturally pulled into the malaise of being a neat.
Yeah. Oh, wait, that reminds me. The fucking... To do a third season. Doing a third season. Great. I mean, he's got something to do. Gotta get up and start having adventures. Yeah. Oh, but there's this thing. We've been laid off. They let us go.
We've been recast. So they're kind of spying on the new family. Are they spying on the new family, or are they spying on them doing like their promos or something?
No, just spying on them. They're just watching or doing things around the house, like taking the bins out and, you know,
being nice,
like,
boys.
Good sons
yeah.
would do. It's like, okay, well, there's only one thing to do first. Yeah, that's right. We gotta kill them all.
And as they're advancing on them with their equally menacing weapons, they get pulled into an alternate dimension by Seal, I guess.
That's not Sailor. This is the Anime Production Committee, of course.
Oh, same thing. Yeah.
Also, that's the Obelisk Product Committee.
And yet they're there to be chewed out by them, saying, "Is like, yeah, your last things was really, those were some fucked up things you guys used to do, nudity constantly." And even Iami's going like, "Hey, come on, guys, it's not what are the two eras he fucking goes at the
isn't the Showa or the Heisei era anymore? You're in the Reiwa era now, baby. This is the real
and
deal."
I love their reaction. It was like, of all fucking people, you cannot fucking lecture us on that. Old fashioned as shit.
But it's okay. It's where we appreciate all your efforts thus far to get to this point, and so we have to send you off with words here from the voice cast. So just all this, the voice cast come out then, offer them flowers. Hey, good luck in your future endeavors. You got,
and they're all like, but I mean, like, if you guys aren't voicing us, then surely like you're in trouble. And like, nah, we're actually very popular voice actors. We're cool. We're set up for life. And some of them don't get on more than others. I really enjoyed that the the Totti has he's just like, who the fuck is this guy? I'm guessing his voice actor isn't like a guy whose face is in the public, so there's just random dude.
Well, it's Miu Irino, but they got some kind of like mustached baby called Koji Murakami who was supposedly voicing Totti all this time.
They couldn't get him in to voice himself, but they could get him in to voice Totti, which is like, that's a strange situation they find themselves in. Jushi Matsu gets on perfectly with his voice actor, obviously.
Yeah.
Few good jokes there. And I did like, your man is just like, I'm trying to remember all their names now. This is going to take me a while again.
Which one?
Ishimatsu does not get on with his happy version of him. The guy who isn't as miserable as him in real life.
Yeah, he's Jun Fukuyama, who's a pretty energetic type of dude.
Loves sports.
Yeah. Judo and kendo and his abilities.
That's a great bit. They bring in the director who gives out to them for being just nasty, but they're like, you directed us to do this. That's on you, man.
Yeah,
we're fictional characters.
I'm wondering if Yuichi Fujita is bleaching his hair now, because the file photo I got of him is, well, I suppose he's wearing a baseball cap, so how am I to know? But
sure.
Goatee's accurate, but it's like, okay, now get the hell out of here.
Get the fuck out of here. You're done.
And they go set to the re-education or the Nomura character rebirth factory. I'm not sure what that could be a thing. But I know that Tetsuya Nomura, the Final Fantasy and Kingdom Hearts dude is, you know, both loved and loathed in equal measure for his character design. So I wonder if something
like that. Maybe it's a thing of people have been throwing him their characters to fix and he does his standard thing with them.
Yeah.
You know, pretty belts. You know the thing.
So we're going to put them all in here. We got Decapan coming down the conveyor belt. What are they going to do to him? Oh, I'm going to put him in like in regular clothes.
So he just looks like a guy.
Yeah. Then Hatabo comes down and he just like does the same jib. Oh, because the guy's the flag in his head anymore. I suppose I know it's him. That's his whole like charm point. Then
he's
Dayan
just some
comes
random
down.
Kid.
I was like, oh man, Dayan, what's going to happen to him? It's just like, the mole comes over him and comes clean. It's like, oh, he's the same. I suppose Dayan doesn't need any improvement at all. He's perfect the way he is.
There's nothing offensive about Dayan. He's a weird man in a suit with a big mouth that says Dayan. There's nothing offensive about that. He's fine. Timeless.
Yeah. Then the Buddha voice come down to get transmogrified into literal pieces of shit. Just coiled up turds in very garish colors and matching their own colors.
except for Totomatsu, who gets spots, I guess, because he's fancier. He's a fancier shit. Or maybe he's one of those dog turds that dries out or something. Who knows?
We need a lot of peanuts and tough grains.
But the machine is kind of reacting. It's like, error, fix, like, character fixing failed, and literally flushes them down the toilet.
Yeah.
So they're floating down in the sewer, contemplating their new life as literal shit.
Yeah. It's not great. I mean, if you're a shit, then where do you shit out of, and what happens?
Jushi Matthew investigates this. I mean, there's a bunch of horrible shit-based jokes, obviously.
Yeah,
they want to start strong, clearly.
Yeah.
You've obviously Ishimatsu being like, I'm fine with this. I got no fucking worries. I got no qualms. And Osamatsu's kind of like, oh, I guess girls won't like us. But yeah, we don't have the pressure of being human. We're literal pieces of shit now. So we can act like pieces of shit and no one will complain.
Ain't no life for anybody, though. They turn on each other. And you see how shit being a shit actually is. It's like, we're sorry. We pay for penance.
Not before they start beating the shit out of each other. Fucking too many shit jokes. But I did like the thing of one of them would say, you're self-conceited or something like that. And the rest of them goes like, yeah, so are you. And it's like, oh, you know, it's like they can't insult each other without insulting themselves because they're all exactly the same kind of asshole. That makes sense.
I mean,
good stuff.
So inept even at fighting each other that they do a six-way cross counter circle.
That was excellent. Yeah.
Yeah. But they beg for forgiveness, and the anime person gonna be decides, okay, you can have your human forms back, but we just live a life of a humble life of penance and
you can live in retirement, we'll give you this one boon. So obviously they take that, and the big Osamatsu season 3 opening.
Red carpet premiere.
They attack it in a van and just fucking make a complete mess of the fucking place.
Yeah. Because they're going on. The reason what's about to is about like peace, love, and understanding, man. I hope by making you laugh at home, it'll take your mind off your worries. And you're like, what the fuck is this? They blow it up. In various, again, copyright infringing ways. We had fucking Ichimatsu just like fly out, like spiritual cat dressed up like Tanjiro from Demon Slayer Kimetsu no Yaiba. His sword technique is, you know, not some fancy sword technique. He drops a bundle of dynamite at their feet and detonates it.
I feel like he can get away with it because of that. I'm just like, well, he didn't do a sword technique. He blew them up with dynamite and distracted them with making them think it was a sword technique. That's fine. That's legally distinct. Jishimatsu turns into a giant piece of shit.
But they all combine together.
They do. You're right.
A huge monster starts smashing the place up.
The new, improved, kinder brothers try and accept them into their family, and we can be a sextuplet of, I'm trying to do my maths here. What is that? 24? Yeah, 24. Which they look like they're going to go for, but then they don't. They just smash them into a wall. And then the real fucking kicker. Those boys were on drugs.
Dope. They did the one thing you can't do. Like, you can be fucking like naked and you can do like the shit jokes and have the fucking...
You can take your dick out.
Put a sign outside saying, please not for entering, masturbation in progress. And you can do all that.
You can do all that. You can turn into a piece of shit and you can literally be shitting on screen, but you can't do that. So they get carted off by the cops. And that leaves a slot open, I guess.
Announce the weed. Your career is over, pal. Let's pick him away, Joys.
Yeah, this episode was a fucking delight. It felt like I was kind of like had a big grin on my face and the shit jokes made me go cringe. And then I was just like, yeah, this is actually pretty funny still, though. It felt welcoming again. It's nice to get back to them.
It's like a point of getting back, you know, again, it's like putting on the comfy pair of shoes. But it's also as well, this is what is expected of us if we're going to do it. And it's like, people expect us to really gross people out and be completely scandalous, and also to like parody a bunch of things in the opening episode. So we're going to do all of that. I was like, oh yeah, okay. But I was kind of using as well a little bit in the previous series, open episode of that, where you came back and you were proper anime characters who would branched off into different genres and animation styles. Mm-hmm. And then you just like went crazy and messed it up with a bunch of parodies as well. So, you know, playing on me. I expect them to do this.
But. Yeah, for sure. And a good strong opener. Like again, it wasn't that season two was particularly bad. It just wasn't nearly as good as the first season. So hopefully they can recapture some of that magic. And again, a very strong opening. So
yeah,
I have high hopes for these boys.
Yeah,
I have low hopes for the characters.
Yeah,
but yeah. The show.
I suppose you get Yakuichi Fujita in there, you know, he's kind of getting back, he's taking full charge of it because he was off doing Tuscaloids.
Which was the better show while we were watching it.
I have hopes for it too. You know, I mean, it's not many TV series these days that are referencing a giant robo, because that's what Giga Shit is doing. It's like Destroying the City is doing like the finger snaps and cutting things open, like Fitzcarraldo. The dude we've seen in the second to last bit of Giant Robo does that thing. That's really cool.
He can cut you by clicking. I got the guy. There was some fun references thrown in there, all right.
It does just kick off in that like opening, that opening, the closing kind of mayhem bit. You know, if that bodes well for how it will look down the line too, if they wanted to go balls to the wall like that. But anyway, you move on to something else.
Yep. I don't actually have this episode title written in. Whoops.
Golden Kamuy, episode 26, Stinker.
I thought that was the last 50, episode.
50,000 times.
Yeah. I thought that was last episode. That's why I didn't. Yeah. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
So you will learn what it is. Man, again, it's back. It's coming back strong. It's coming back manly and gay, just like the way you want it. I freaking love this show.
Yeah. Because the guy keep on fighting the gangs and want to draw out the other dude. The bartender who's been setting him up for, and who's like holding the dog costume, is saying, no, you're going to like to go into the fixed fight. And you're going to go down the fifth. Because I can make a lot of money.
Because people have been hearing about these four Japanese guys who are badass. And they're like, we're going to set up a fight between them. And the other Japanese guy who everyone thinks is badass. So it's going to be like, oh, it's going to be obviously in your favor, but I'm going to win a lot of money by betting on you if you throw it. And Sugimoto's like, nah,
Quit wasting our time, give us our dog back, and we'll fucking do things to you. Like what? Oh, I know, like, in Hokkaido, I got a poison where they cut someone's nose and ears off. You got something like that here on Karafuto in Inoka? Yeah, we do, says the tiny child. We cut off their fingertips. Let's do that to him.
Yeah, so they're threatening that, and your man's trying to weasel away out, saying he's seen the guy in the photo. And they're like, yeah, he's probably just bullshitting, so we won't fucking kill him. And Sugimoto's like, no, let's fucking hear him out, kind of thing. And they're kind of like, Sugimoto, this is very soft for you. We, like, because your man's translating thing was like, okay, we're going to cut your fingertips off one by one till you give us back the dog. And then if we cut them all off, we're just going to bury you out the fucking back, go to the Stenka, kidnap your man anyway, and we don't give a fuck about you. But Sugimoto's like, hang on, lads, that's a bit extreme now. I don't know about that. And the likelihood is because Sugimoto has already met the dude they're looking for.
Yes.
But he's kind of like, I want to fight this dude, is probably what everyone is thinking.
Yeah. It's the one thing that you can't give up, pass up a possible lead on toward the Serpa. But also, he has met formerly Gansaku Maihara, bare-knuckle boxer and jealous boyfriend, based on real-life convict Charles Bronson. Now it is going by Charles Salvador, because he's probably the most famous and most violent prisoner in Britain, as the press have often called him. Such as was like the film about him, the Bronson, starring Tom Hardy as Charles Bronson. He just is this dude who has basically lived most of his adult life, almost the entirety of it, almost.
More of his life in prison than out. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Not for any one thing. I mean, you know, you kind of got in there on petty crimes, but he was just inside. Does commit
if you keep doing crimes in prison, they just leave you there. Yeah,
they just keeps pulling around, and that's kind of this legend was notoriety. But it's what informs Gansaku Maiharu here.
I do like Gansaku more because I feel like he's a more likable fellow.
Yeah,
and he also this guy's backstory is like, I was very violent when I was younger, and no one really understood me. But when I was in prison, they really got me there, man.
I was somebody. And there's also potential as well. He also gets a similar, like, before the fight interview, you know. With a little,
I fucking love that. What does Stenka mean to you?
It's a method of as an art form of self-expression.
And the interview is fucking great. I love those. That's a really good conceit for these episodes.
Yeah. But it's like when he was like fighting in prison, you know, you get to beat up guys and people love you for it. And you meet such interesting people. Like there was this dude, Ushiyama, who he'd always take me out because he's good at judo. But
if he caught me, he'd fucking take you down because once you get in a judo hold, you're fucked. But if it was just punching, sometimes I'd win. And then the cheers from the other prisoners when the warden would send him on me to put me down and I beat him for once, it was just like, felt great. So obviously I love punching.
So he's super excited to fight. He obviously reveals the tattoos and takes off his glasses to reveal his, well, not even reveal, but it's like making his sparkly, very friendly eyes.
It's friendly eyes with the long, thick lashes. He's just a handsome fellow.
Bambi. We get these dudes just knocking the crap out of each other, and him and Sugimoto are going toe-to-toe. But Sugimoto takes a couple of blows to the head, and he starts running wild. And the rest of the guys don't think quite, he keeps going, ah, yes, this is your plan, Sugimoto. Like, we're going to, like, mess up basically and get disqualified from the fight. Is that what you're going for? But he just keeps flying around, punching people.
Initially, he's just hitting other guys who are his teammates are fighting. But your man's very jealous. It's like, no, fight me. And then that becomes more punches. But yeah, all the lads think they have an understanding of Sugimoto's plan, or just like, hey, Sugimoto, calm down. And he just punches them all one by one. And it sort of ends up with him kicking our boxer in the head. And all the audience are like, hey, that's right out. Come on, it's all okay except for like kicks and shit. This is boxing.
What's also right out is pulling the hammer and sickle off the wall. But
the old man's reaction when everyone piles into the ring and everyone's just brawling the fuck and everyone just beating the shit, a barn full of people beating the shit out of each other. He's like, this is real Stenka. And then he pulls the hammer and sickle off the wall and he's like, this isn't Stenka.
Yeah.
That's too far. You went too far, Sugimoto.
Yeah, really grossly, like Sugimoto's brain juices are flowing out of his head. It's a lot like Tsurumi's as well, but his metal plate in his head, and he's just gone into a berserk rampage where he's attacking everybody and everything.
Yeah. His brain has been switched off or switched on to berserk mode, I guess.
And he's just like going, ah, gold, gold. And poor Gansaku was just, you only want happy for the tattoos and find a way to the gold. He just runs off
I thought we had something, man. And then tearfully running off as it's the end of the episode. But yeah, the lads chase him out into the woods, where he promptly is getting attacked by a Wolverine. This is probably the same Wolverine, honestly. That one probably. Fucking bastard. So they pull the Wolverine off and they're like, yeah, we can't beat this guy with Stenka because we're a bunch of shirtless dudes. And that's the Wolverine. So quick, let's run for that cabin. Wasn't a cabin, though. It was a Russian steam house.
A banya.
And there's so many great moments of just going like, oh, it's too hot in here, but we can't go outside as a Wolverine. Oh, it's too hot in here. So they all take their pants off, obviously.
We may as well enjoy it. You know?
And the amount of times it kind of cuts to them just posing in the in the steam place. It was just really fun.
Now, while all this is going on, junior detective team of Boner and Inanoka, they're like scoping out the house, the cabin where the lead dog is being kept in. So
yeah, they're following the other guy from the other guy from the dog, because obviously he's minding the dogs because he's not going to the Stenka. So they're watching him, and he's gotten drunk eating his dinner. And so they're kind of like, okay, we're going to... And it looks like they're poking in the window with a stick and they're trying to steal the keys. And they just keep poking him in the fucking face and pulling up his gums. But I did like that reveal that it's like, no, that's what they were going for, because they booby-trapped the door. it caught the audience on guard. It's like, oh, fuck, we've been rumbled. It's like, no, we really wanted to wake up this piece of shit.
Yeah. So to get the key, actually, what they're going to do is they have Tanaka's rifle, so they're going to shoot the lock off.
Yeah, they just want to knock that fucking guy out and then shoot the lock off. Thereby, they don't need to mask the sound.
Yeah. While they're escaping, then, that shot's overheard by Berserk Sugimoto when he runs in their direction.
Still hammer and sickle in hand. Was it like him becoming more Russian as it went on, as he got more blows to the head or something? Because it's like, initially, it's like, yeah, he's all Stenka, Stenka, Stenka. And then it's like hammer and sickle. I was like, oh, now he's even more Russian than when he started.
Wasn't like hammer and sickle, wasn't it like, or were they like villains in Marvel comics, I think, weren't they? They were like,
yeah, they would have been like probably ex-Soviet
super villains.
Yeah, probably. But like, obviously, that's the Russian symbols of the peoples, of the workers. But yeah, it's for Sugimoto, just like, I found some weapons. And they do see him wandering through the woods, but Boner says, Sugimoto seems out of it. Keep fucking going. Let's get the fuck out of here. They do have the dog in their, I guess it's equivalent of a two dog sleigh, but it's only two kids, so they're grand.
Yeah.
Boner falls off. And is getting attacked by the Wolverine. Cut back to the bathhouse. The boys are too hot in the bathhouse, and your man is pouring more steam on. They're all like, what the fuck, dude? You're just going to make it more steamy and hotter. And then he's like hitting them with I've forgotten the name of those leaves.
Those cypress branches.
Yeah, I've forgotten the tree is all. But yeah, it's like, it's to promote blood kind of coming through.
There's blood
and
flow, yeah.
It makes you warmer. Also, it swirls the steam around, so it makes it warmer. Because he's like, you guys just want my tattoo, so I'm going to knock you out with these fucking things. And they're all like, hey, you don't knock us out with those things. So they start slapping him. And he's like, come on, hit me more.
I'll take all four of you. Come on.
Like he was earlier, but like, it's become considerably more gay now. How do they have to escape the steam house again? I've forgotten that bit.
Well, I think they probably heard all the commotion outside.
Because
Sugimoto is attacking Boner, but then the Wolverine comes along and attacking Sugimoto.
Well, initially the Wolverine's trying to eat Boner, but he's holding it off by keeping the rifle in its jaws. Sugimoto is fighting the biggest guy he can find, and which in this case is a Wolverine. but fortunately... Tanigaki turns up to give Boner advice on boners.
it's a nice little moment, actually, because Boner he's trying to like to load the bullet into it, but his hands are shaking and can't get the close, so I can then just call out from inside two strong steady cans, just like bullet, slip, close, cocked, ready to go. But Boner, you gotta pull the trigger.
You got one shot, make it count.
Yeah. He blasts it. It's pretty sweet. It's a special moment between the two. He's being like the surrogate father figure to this little dude. He's shown
but,
in a way.
But it does, it's spoiled slash improved by, it's like Boner kind of going, is this a Boner? And he's, and like, is he talking about a gun or does your man have a stiffy? And your man turning into him completely naked still, obviously, going like, yeah. Yes, Boner, this is a real Boner. And I was just like, this is a weird situation right now. But yeah, Sugimoto is still battle crazed, but our other guy who's really into battle, our Bronson stand-in, is like, okay, I'll fucking take him on. It's like, come on, Sugimoto, bring it out. And Sugimoto drops the hammer and sickle, has enough sense to do that, and gets into just a man-on-man fucking action. That's as gay as it sounds.
Therapy session.
Yeah, because he's like, Sugimoto's hitting me with such rage, but he doesn't even know me. Why is he feeling this rage? And through his grunts and roars and growls, it's kind of like, it's a self-hatred for failing a Serpa kind of thing. And he's kind of like, forgive yourself, Sugimoto. And it's just like, Sugimoto does bring him to one knee, which is pretty good. And the lads try and intervene, but they've been fighting on a lake this entire time and they all fall into the water. This is the steam house into the cold bath and then back to the steam house.
Back to the van, yeah. We can all laugh about it. It's like, you guys are going to get to my tattoos? No, idiot. We're just going to like take a copy of them and leave you be. Because as long
we'll
as
take a copy
as
of them, you move away and people will be chasing us for the copy of your tattoos and no one will know where the fuck you are. Go to Russia. Become a true master of Stenka.
Yeah.
They're just like, we don't want to fucking kill you. We just want the copy of your tattoo. And then if we copy it, then people will chase us rather than you. So.
I've seen this girl talking about, what's her name, Asurpa? Yeah, I saw her in the tavern there the other week. She was there with some dude talking about it. Actually, we're talking about you, Sugimoto, I believe. It's like, is he going to actually make all the way up here? Of course he is. He's immortal Sugimoto. It's like, she's still out there. I gotta find her. Why is she doing it right now? She is showing Ogata and Shiraishi how to hunt seals properly.
We get a good detailed thing of like eating the fat, but it's kind of like when you have like a bit of beef and there's a bunch of fat in it, don't put too much in your mouth at once or you'll be chewing for ages. I did like that post credits thing. That was nice. The fact that she's still obviously Sugimoto recognizing that it was a Serpa he was talking about, because when your man said, it's like, I heard them talking about some guy and I assume it was you, but the kind of thing I was like, I think he might have died a Serpa. And she's just saying, he's like, what are you talking about? He's the immortal Sugimoto. And him just kind of smiling, going like, yeah, she still has faith in me, so I still have a chance to save her kind of thing. It's a nice bit and nice to see that she's still about being a mad fucking bastard with the rest of them.
Yeah, it was good kind of having this Charles Bronson analogue. Because from writings, his own writings even, and also just like writing about him and even the film as well. It's just in this sort of period of lawless violence, because there's not many in the way of like of authorities around. You got like the
your
army,
local authority or something.
Of course, violence is running rampant. It's kind of everywhere, and it defines so many people. And like Charles Bronson, it feels like, you know, I'm not misunderstand me. You know, I'm violent. I'm not necessarily like violent any one person or thing for any one reason. It's just because of a kind of, I just get angry and just lash out sometimes, and so I only express my frustration or my disenfranchisement with my two fists. And people don't get that, and they think I'm some kind of serial killer.
A guy who might have done better in the Wild West or on a gold chase in this between wars period, that kind of thing. It's just like, might have done better in a different time period, but yeah, I get where you're going. And obviously this guy is a guy who is functioning like that.
Yeah. And, you know, the kind of character you hope to see again, because he is a fun little
addition. Fucking delight. Yeah.
There's a really weird making me like root for these like hardened killers and criminals. It's like, oh. Like, someone like Henry, you know, the dude from way back when they were at the fishing village, and he really wants Sugimoto to kill him.
Yeah, like you like these guys, even though they are in often cases monsters, and even the bad guys, you're kind of like, yeah, I still enjoy you being around them. They're fun to be around, even though they are a bunch of murderers and killers. Who's your man with the tan on our squad at the moment?
Koito.
Yeah, like he's an annoying prick often, like, and selfish and, like, fucking, like, thinks he's fancy and everything. But, like, his constant going to, this was your plan, right, Tsukimoto? Like, constantly throughout this episode. It's like, maybe this was part of Tsukimoto's plan to, so we'd hide in this steam house. And everyone's like, no, it fucking wasn't. What are you talking about? He's just assuming that everything was for a purpose. It's endearing. And these characters who have flaws and are shitty quite often, they're quite lovable as well. It really balances on that fucking tightrope very well.
Yeah. Better get going now. But from Russia / Japan to Greece, ancient Greece, extra Olympia kite class, episode 21, Villager A. Those darn Athenians spoiling the party.
So they showed up, they figured it's just like, hey, we realize you're kind of talking your way out of our fucking thing, out of like us, out of stealing our copyrighted Olympics.
Elaine,
so we said,
even.
The Illyrians, sorry, you're right, yeah. They basically went, we're just going to have a war on you and wipe you the fuck out. And the Spartans are like, fucking fine by us. We're just going to get our shit and we'll be back tomorrow for a good war. And the Tortonias are kind of like, yeah, the mayor's like, yeah, we could fucking, initially he's like, oh no, a war. But then the Spartans are like, yeah, we're on your side. He's like, yeah, fucking war, boys.
Because initially, yeah, the crowd's kind of confused us because now this like two Olympics opening ceremony speech has turned into this fucking call to arms instead. It's like, war, I thought we'd go play some games.
Yeah, it's
oh,
a little
well,
bit of
sure.
Positive
war, yeah, all right.
And yeah, our boy runs off and pleads with the gods. Is like, please, Zeus, there. If we don't do anything, there'll be war. And a vision of Zeus appears to him. Is like, yeah, cool, I love war. And he's like, oh yeah, Zeus.
Quick gods
Zeus.
Be like that, don't they?
Yeah, they do like the war. I didn't think of that. So Zeus sends him to the far future of the 70s, I think he is now. He meets up with our professor boy and he's like, hey, professor, how do we win this war? And he's like, let me look up this thing. Oh, according to the history book that I'm reading now, there was a village called Tortonia who was completely wiped out. And he's like, ah, shit. How would we stop a war? Well, there's a Japan just got out of a war like 20 years ago. So the guys who beat us in the war, the Americans, they're still having a war in Vietnam and people in America are protesting that now with music. And he's like, music, eh? If only I knew a guy who was really good at songs. I do. Back to the past. And he's like, hey, everyone, listen to this. And he pulls in our bard to like actually be in the episode. It doesn't technically cut.
I sing the song Villager Ray where he's like playing his music, but he's also being like the lead singer for it as well on a separate model. But it just puts the head of the bard, this beardy dude, onto the body of this woman's body in a lovely gown, singing very soulfully on the glitter ball. It's like, are you sure you want to go to war? Because you've been sold stories about how you can be a cool hero dude, but really, who are you? You're Villager A. You got no like real martial combat ability. You're dead.
And even Achilles said, I would much prefer like to be a farmer than to be in a war and shit because it sucks. And that was Achilles, like, and he was good at that.
Yeah.
So
same kind of person who thinks, oh yeah, like, downfall society, I'd be like Kenshiro writing about a motorbike and saying, motherfucker, you would fucking just be the dude who gets not even one of the bad guys who gets beaten up by Kenshiro.
You wouldn't even be one of the goons. You'd be one of the fucking random villagers who live in the desert waits who get killed by the goons in order to motivate Kenshiro.
Look, I could be Jaggy at least. Fuck no, I couldn't be Jaggy.
Jaggy is fucking so many layers above you.
You're not Tokyo, you're not even Amoeba. Shit.
Yeah, so I was so tempted to go straight into the next one. But yeah, a good cliffhanger, really good episode, really good fun as usual. I'm gonna miss this fucking show when it's done, man. I keep saying that, but it's so fucking good every week.
Well, just still room in your heart for just getting going. Jujutsu Kaisen episode 3, Girl of Steel. That Girl of Steel being Nobara Kugisaki, the third first year applied to Jujutsu Tech. And just picking her up in Tokyo.
Yeah, and our boy's kind of saying, I thought you said I was the third student. And I was like, well, like, you're the second one here. So, you know.
Which her application came through like ages ago. We're just coming to pick her up now. She's coming into town. Nobara Kugisaki, she wants to be a big city girl. She wants to go away from her dead end countryside town. We'll go up to big life. in the big, the orb, the big smoke.
Mm-hmm.
So she's kind of, kind of pushy, but then has certain expression senses of us. And then there's a dude out trying to just harassing women in the street, saying, "Hey, you're pretty. I got come at me and give you a sweet modeling gig." It's been gonna wake creep. He's like, "Hey, what about me? I'm a guy good looking. It's not that kind of a job. I gotta go." Whatever.
Yeah, that's a fun way to meet her as well, and it is kind of like it gets her pushy personality in it. She gets several really good moments of just being kind of a dick. It's always very funny.
Yeah. Now Yuji is also being really embarrassing as well, because she hasn't had the opportunity to go into the big city that much either. So.
He's still from the fucking sticks as well. Yeah. So when your man promises them, it's like, "Oh, I'll take you out to the cool part of town," and they're like, "Oh, sweet," and it's like to exercise this building near a graveyard, and they're like, "You motherfucker, we thought we were going fucking hitting all the tourist spots."
Yeah, this dude is being so embarrassed, and he's got like a milkshake in one hand and ice cream in the other, and he's wearing like
fucking wearing big sunglasses, like
2020 glasses, whatever they were. Yeah,
it had like the word "look" or something on it, I can't remember. Just yeah, like, you know, like typical fucking giant novelty sunglasses.
Because he's doing that, and he's like cookie sacking, he's going at her like, "Oh, she's being so embarrassed, making a real scene right now." It's like, look at you.
Dear.
But they get sent in to the building, and Kukisaki and Yuji do, and
because he's keeping him out because it's like, "Hey, you're still recovering, and also this is a test, mostly for her but for both of them."
Yeah. Now you haven't got any cursed technique just yet on that, but you have eaten the fingers, you've got cursed energy in you, so you can hit stuff. That's fine. Here, have this sweet knife. It's called Demon Slayer, or what was it? Demon Destroyer.
Yeah, it's a cool name anyway. It's a cool fuzzy knife, and it's just like, yeah, this thing has cursed things so you can actually damage them. So go to town. She's being shitty to this other country bumpkin the entire time. I guess she's trying to establish like dominance. It's like, "I'm less of a country bumpkin than you," kind of thing.
Another culture, you're a culture, you're a bigger culture than me.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, she's decided, it's like, "Okay, well, instead of hanging together, we'll split up. You take the bottom floor, I'll go to the top floor, and we'll work our way, meet in the middle. That way we'll fucking clear this place." And he's like, "We should probably like do it together because like this shit's dangerous." And she's like, "Okay, you think I'm fucking can't handle it? Whatever, buddy." And he takes that knife like a fish to water. You got to give him that.
Satoru and Fushiguro are just talking outside. It's just like, think about Yuji. He's got a few screws loose upstairs. He's got like, hesitancy, you know, when it comes to fighting kind of human shit opponents, I'd say. That's understandable. I mean, just a few days ago, he was just like a regular lad just going to school. But is something going on up there? He is dissecting this cursed monster with aplomb. He's fucking opening it up and cutting it like a fish.
Yeah, and as your man says outside, it's kind of like he's got like this natural kind of, like it's just like he's never seen ghosts before. This is brand fucking new to him. He was just a regular high school student like just the other day. But now he's just like, when he fights these things, he goes all fucking in and does not hold back physically. And that's crazy. That's good, because we need crazy people. So it's mainly a test for her, because I want to see how crazy she is.
Yeah.
You got to be crazy to be in this job, because it's a fucking mad job.
Yeah. We're going to see her cool technique, which involves a hammer and nails.
Ah, it's so rad.
Sort of just like levitates the 8 nails into the air with her curse energy and just whacks them. And it just,
I was worried they were going to hover in the air for too long, but it's nearly like she throws the 8 nails up in the air and just hits them so fucking hard. I was just that looks so good.
That's the way I imagine it in the comic, more so.
Yeah, but I was worried they were going to translate that as they sort of hover in the air and give her plenty of time to aim it. But no, it's like, no, it's just like, it's one fucking action. Very, very satisfying as well, because it is satisfying in the comic. So I was glad to see that look good on screen, motion.
You know, it's violent enough to have just nails, like flying nails are shot into you, but also they're filled with energy, which you can just detonate and make your head blow up. Like this cursed mannequin, for instance.
The cursed mannequin gets two in its head and it's starting to wake up, and she's like, "You might want to fucking take those out, because I'm just going to fucking send them further in," and just stabbing it further in the head.
Ammo.
Kills it. And as our boy says outside, the other part of the test for her is... she's used to dealing with very smaller kinds of curses, because curses build up in where there's more people, and this is a huge fucking city. So the curves are going to be bigger and tougher, or at least in the case of the one that she meets a little boy who's kind of cowering in the corner, but there's a curse there, not very powerful one, but a lot smarter because it's holding the boy between her and it. So it's kind of like, she's like, shit, this guy isn't even that tough, but he's taking hostages. How do I deal with this? Okay, I bet best thing to do is to let the kid die, because if I surrender, it'll kill me and then the kid. At least if it kills the kid, I can fucking kill it and stop it from killing further people. But she's like, can't do it. Puts the gun on the ground. I bet you in the hammer and the nails. And her, I keep forgetting that pouch is like just full of nails.
Well, it's like a builder's tool belt.
Yeah. But it just reminds me of a bum bag. It's the way I'm thinking of a bum bag full of nails. Yeah, she drops that and is like, I'm unarmed. Fucking let the boy go. And it's just smiling away.
You're not going to let him go, are you? This is being super curse. But is this a fist through the wall?
The fist through the wall sort of miming is like, wait, did I fucking miss? Ah, never mind.
That's going to be so cool, but I messed it up.
Bursts the entire body through the wall and like chops the curse's hands off that's holding the kid and makes that curse wide open to get hammered. But the curse is going to leg it from the building. The two lads outside just basically having a fag break, but not really. Your man's just on his phone and shit. And it's just like, should we kill that thing that just jumped out? And he's like, no. Let's see how this pans out. And she sends some nails at a fucking fair distance into that thing and takes it out before it hits the ground.
What she does is this, severed arm.
That's right.
She just says, Yugi, throw me the arm. She's opens up her jacket. She's got a little straw voodoo doll pinned up inside there. She kind of attaches the arm to the doll and then whacks a nail straight into it. Which
does it at a distance. You're right. That was the rad fucking thing I forgot. Yes.
Yeah, which just causes the escaping curse to explode from the inside like a guy's fucking Hokuto Shinken or something.
Yeah, I did like the way himself and the kid were both like, this is creepy, she's got like fucking voodoo dolls and shit. But it's just like, yeah, you got a doll to represent a curse in this case, and you have a piece of the curse, like, I don't know, its hair or its severed hand. And it's just like, nope, now I can fucking affect it from a distance. Cool shit.
Then they all went down for sushi.
but they have trouble deciding which sushi. I did like your man kind of going like, hey, what do you guys want to go? It's like, I want to have sushi. I want to have pizza or whatever. And the other guy's like, what do you want? And he's just being the cool guy. I don't give a fuck. So they start going off without him. And he's like, hey, I want sushi.
I want to get the revolving sushi. What are we talking about? I've never had sushi before. I've never seen the revolving kind. So what was the difference? It looks fun.
We're in the big city. It's on a fucking train. That's modern as shit.
Yeah, while those two are arguing away, you know, and then the lads on the phone is basically on fucking, like, fucking menupages.com. It's like, is this pretty good? You know, if we're going to bring them somewhere.
If it's their first time in Tokyo, you know, we got to take them to this place, because that place is fucking, that'll set you up as the baseline for what Tokyo sushi is like.
Yeah. So it's all like happy, fun times, and then it closes out, with this like very grim report of an incident involving curses. A curse womb appeared in the sky over a juvenile detention facility.
Yeah, so bad that regular people could see it. And, you know, if prisoners kind of going like, or detainees kind of going like, hey, do you see that weird fucking thing in the sky? And other people going like, the fuck are you talking about?
It's like, the Jutsu Sorcerer dispatched to investigate. Three first students from Jutsu Tech were sent in to take care of the job. One of them died. Dun, dun, dun.
That really pulls the rug out from, like, the happy ending it would have had other than that. This show is continuing to be great. It shows no signs of slowing yet.
Yeah, it's cool bringing in Kugisaki. Of course, you've got to round out that little trio. Ross Brothers and Trees. And I just like her very simple rationale of why she wants to get into Jujutsu Tech is just get out of the country and go somewhere else, man. Because
I wanted to get into Tokyo, and it's very expensive in Tokyo, so this means I can live and work in Tokyo without worrying about rent and shit.
Yeah.
Gets me out of my freaking black hole of a country town. So yeah works out for me.
But what she also wanted to get away from is that
small town mindedness.
Small mindedness. Mm-hmm. And that was his own like well of negative feeling and kind of fucking more people probably more than cursed under their breath. Because she was from there, but another girl moved to town, and I guess they were from a well off family. They got a big house, and she
a lot of older girl, but who was really nice to her when she was a little kid and everything, but the country people thought that she was a bit of a bit prissy and thinks better of herself because she's from the city. Ooh, you think we're all country fucking idiots, don't you? Drove her out of town, basically. And she's like, I do not want to be in a town where people foster those kind of feelings among each other.
Yeah. And also things that, well, if I go to Tokyo, who knows, I might run into her. Might start going to that bakery she mentioned to get all the good sweets on. I might find her there. You never know.
And as you said to me before, this ties in nicely with what's happening in the comic. I love it when there's synchronicity between the show and the comic. It ties in nicely with her backstory and everything and what's going on currently in the comic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, cool stuff.
I like it. I like it too, how it's this, like, this opposite reflex to... what some anime are about in recent times. Where if you move to the countryside, things will be nice, better. People there are kinder and sweeter and nicer. You're away from all that hustle and bustle and stress in the big city. It's just like, well, small towns have their drawbacks as well. Such as things like this. People are very small-minded. You've got access to nothing. You have no kind of good aspirations for yourself beyond like taking up the family business or trade. Or
you
were
born here,
like
you live here, and you'll die here. And that kind of fucking thing. So it's nicely to address that. And even your man points out, it's just like, well, I've got like a very, what I think is like a deep reason for wanting to fight curses. And I guess it's fine to have a completely unsubtle thing. I was like, I just wanted to move away from the country as a reason to, obviously there's deeper reasons why she wants to move away from the country. But yeah, sometimes a simple reason is good enough motivation.
I think as far as you can see, she knows the curses are born from negative thoughts, and she's seen in one form or another what that kind of negative emotion can do. It fucking drove her best friend out of town, like drove her and her family out of town. So it's just maybe I should be more proactive in taking this shit down.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, yeah, she's cool and more fun with that. Hopefully, she won't die next week.
One of them will die. I mean, like the preview said, it can't lie to us.
No.
Next up, we got With a Dog and a Cat. Every Day is Fun. Episode 3, because we don't have time for episode titles. No time.
But this is a very special episode of With a Dog and a Cat, Every Day is Fun. Because it is just about the owner lady. She's taking the cat to the vet. The cat's not having a good time with it, obviously, as cats put into a little carrying cage would be. She get a taxi in there and talking with the driver.
Yeah, and the driver's like, "Hey, are you taking your cat to the vet?" And she's like, "Yeah, sorry, he's complaining." And it's like, "No, he's cats are smart. Like they know when you're taking them someplace you don't want to go. They know the kind of thing." And she's like, "Oh, thank fuck, he's a cat person. He's not going to give out to me."
I once had a cat, you know.
Yeah, he had a cat, and the cat used to It used to like be like really put offish with him when he went put on his work clothes and headed out to work, but then like on the weekends he'd be wearing his non-work clothes and the cat would basically attack him. Oh, he used to fuck me up basically. He was powerful. I can't get a cat now because it would kick my ass. I'm old now.
Yeah, but I can't
he had to sneak out like on the weekend wearing his work clothes so that the cat would think he was going to work and let him go to work. Basically.
Yep. He's older now as well, and he kind of misses the cat, but he's like, he gets off, and she's asking, why don't you just get another cat? Well,
because it would kick my ass, I'm a lot older, but also, my old cat was very selfish, and she's kind of thinking, he didn't finish that sentence, but what I think he was going to say was, the cat was selfish and wouldn't let him have another cat.
And from beyond the grave.
But yeah, the fact that he remembers how his cat would feel about a particular situation that hasn't happened means that the cat is still kind of with him. He still has that memory carrying it around with him, and it makes him happy. And it's sweet and nice. And I was just like, okay, while the show thinks cats can be assholes, I mean, like any fucking pet can be, it definitely has a love for cats, for sure.
Yeah. Even when they are rattling around inside a carry cage, being in the vet room good, and see the cat as has punched a hole through the top of it in its struggles.
Yeah, yeah. Understandable. If you don't want to go to the fucking doctor, that's not a great fucking thing to be forced to do, so I get it.
You don't need a vet, you need a priest. What we really need is a hero, though. A Dragon Quest hero, a Dragon Quest The Adventure of Dai, Episode 3, The Hero's Tutor.
Where our nerdy boy and his disciple pull up on the island going like, hey, we're here from the kingdom from Princess, I've forgotten her name instantly, good job me.
Papnika? Leona is a princess and Papnika is
the guy. Yeah, sorry, the kingdom, I mean. We're here from Princess Leona to fucking recruit the hero, and I'm the boy who trains the hero. See this guy here? He's my student. I'm training him to be a mage. Yeah. And we hear you're the new hero, so we don't have much time. Dark King's already arisen. As you know, from all the monsters on the island going fucking crazy. Even his grandpa, just struggling to maintain sanity.
Yeah. It was Harold who thought, oh no, the monsters are some of the best parts of this. I want them to stick around, not turn evil. Luckily, this dude, Avan Dezinar III, hero trainer du jour, and his disciple Pop are on hand. And he whips out his sword unsheathed.
Jams it into the ground and charges at the monsters, but goes straight through them and goes right across the country several fucking times, just going like over the hills and everything. And they're all just like, okay, is he going to come back? He does come back. He's completed his magic sigil of squelch, I believe.
Glimmer.
Squelch is the poison curing one, I think. Glimmer is protecting them from the Dark Lord's influence and putting a big force field of anti-influence, I guess, around the island.
Yeah. So it's good. It's like, oh yes, as much the Dark Lord's arisen. We got it sorted out. I actually hear some of his, he was flying in right now, some pair of gargoyles here to attack the island. Maybe you could show us your stuff, hero. I think you get the stuff that we need to save the world.
Well, Pop takes out one of them pretty handily. But
He's got no follow-through.
He doesn't have the combat stuff, because when that other gargoyle hits him with... I've forgotten the name of the spell. I should be remembering these. The basically one where it messes up the... I'm trying to remember my D&D term. Semantic components, where he can't speak properly, so he can't cast the spells.
Cast silence, I suppose.
Yeah, basically. It probably actually is that spell or whatever, or the equivalent thereof. But so that means our hero has to step up, and he goes like, here, try this legendary sword of mine. It'll carry you far. And he's dueling with that, I was going to say demon, with the gargoyle for a bit, but then the gargoyle's kind of like, yeah, this kid doesn't stand a chance. He's just a kid. He can't beat me, and he probably gets cleaved the fucking too, so.
Yes. Boom.
And as our hero guy turns out, because he's, while he does seem to have the skills to pay the bills, and he's definitely good at training people, he's also up to some fucking shenanigans, because he's like, that was a bullshit sword. I paid like £2 for it. If you can do that with that sword, you can probably do really good with like a good weapon.
Yeah. He's got this vaguely, in some aspects, Reagan Arataka vibe to him, but he's actually super legit.
Like, he's good at what he does, but it seems like he's trying to run a scam, which I'm just like... How are you running a scam at being good at the thing you're doing? I don't understand.
it feels more so that he is really good hero trainer, but there is this kind of cheap tawdriness to it almost.
Even
like his little advertisement is just, I scribbled it down on a scroll, you know, it's even got like a proper business card. Once, you know, is this me? Look, you know, 15-year veteran of the trade. But by the fact he's only got one disciple as well. But he actually, you know, is... super good. He puts Dai on like a tough training course. We got morning and evening. We go sunrise, sunset.
Yeah, and he puts him on his Pop doesn't want to do the easy hero course, which takes, you know, a couple of months, like probably even maybe some years. But he's like, we don't have time. Dark Lord's already risen. So I'm putting you on the week-long hero course, which is the hardcore fucking one. But if we get it done in a week, we're good to go.
Cool.
So part of it is just like, here, chop this rock in two. And it's a rock that he did carry over himself in a very awkward way, but still managed to carry. And I'm like, okay, no, he is super strong and knows cool spells. I was like, he knows his shit. So he's training him. Dai does manage to cut the rock in two using the knife rather than the heavily inverted commas magic sword, which he breaks.
But only after... he's been exhausted from carrying rocks all day, because it's like, kind of like, I just touch, like when you're exhausted, your movements become more basic.
Your movement become more natural. You put less thought into it, and there's more just like you follow through without even thinking about it.
Yeah. So that Dai's natural student is like really great for it. By like the second or third day, he already has Avan sparring. I force him to use both hands while doing it.
Hmm.
And Pop is disinterested initially, but we can see off when dies, he's making great progress, might be ahead of me, and thinking, oh, maybe I should step up my game as well. And that's kind of all part of the plan as well. I thought maybe by training somebody else, it would put the light of fire under the other lad. And he's
when he was talking to the grandpa, Lump Shaman, Lump Source. Yeah, Brass. He's kind of like, oh, what about your other student? He's like, this will motivate him because he'll see someone like advancing considerably faster than him. And he's like, wait, maybe I could do that as well. Because other than that, he'll work the bare minimum that he needs to work. Yeah, it seems to be doing well as well, because he's just like, damn, this kid is going to surpass me. And he's just started, you know?
Yeah. Avan shows Dai the cool sword moves. Like, here's like the super move I got, Avan Slash. You can just cut things up with a cool power wave. Oh, awesome. Okay, first of all, if you want to do that, you got to learn the other forms. So you got the Earth Slice, you got the Sky Slice, you got the Water Slice. So you got to be able to learn to do those. Earth Slice, no problem. You're natural at that.
Mm.
Good to go. But you got, I guess, a way to go. And then, like, the Avan is when you go off to all combined together. So you're cutting, like, the whole world all at once. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Anyways, more training. We're going to get to your final test. We're going to come up here. And your final test is me! And he just, Avan just, like, starts powering up and he morphs into a big red dragon but still has a little spectacles perched on his nose.
Yeah, it's like, don't hold back on me, kid. And it's like, I'm a full fucking dragon now. Which is just like, wait, what? Was he always a dragon? Can he turn into a dragon? What's happening? I guess we'll find out next time.
Yeah. It's just, again, consistently very entertaining and very amusing and very cheerful.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, the worst you could say of it is it feels kind of and very obviously why. It feels very, I guess, old-fashioned, formulaic in ways. But I mean, like, that's because like so many things you've seen are probably based off of things like this or this specifically.
Yeah, I think you need to bear that in mind when you're looking at it. It's just,
yeah.
Like, even Dragon Quest was hardly, fucking setting any records for the quality of its storytelling. It was just going to be, like, you know, a very basic thing, got to defeat the human demon lord.
You know the setup, so you know a bunch of the monsters already and how they work and all that kind of stuff. The spells remain consistent, that kind of thing. But just because you know, like, the different constituent parts doesn't mean you can't put them together in an entertaining way.
Yeah, it's the gameplay and the execution and the enjoyment you get out of that and how endearing the characters in the world are to, you know, as simplistic as it might be rendered, that's what keeps it coming back in. And that's what keeps coming back to this, because it's like, yeah, it's not going to be winning any Pulitzer Prizes or nothing, but man, it's still just a very solidly entertaining and quite well-crafted bit of animation week to week, and we're having really a lot of fun with it. Dial back a little bit on this, you can kind of tell, but... So it's still, this is like, you know, very enjoyable, and this like goes along and a good clip. You know, it's this consistently entertaining, you know, and that's what we kind of watch out for here. Some things that are consistent, you know, and we're able to kind of gauge them as, this is what it's actually definitely like. Some things have good days and bad days, you know, depending on whatever week it is, whatever stresses the actual production crew or whatever. But this just seems like, yeah, it's got it all laid out. It's well planned, I suppose, is what's happening with it. Taiso Samurai episode 2,
Rock Bottom Samurai.
sounds like there's no plan at all in there.
He's talking to the coach and he's like, yeah, sorry coach, that I'm not gonna quit. And the coach is like, motherfucker, I gave you every fucking chance. I'm gonna have no fucking part of this. Get out of my gym. You're not part of this gym anymore. And it's just kind of like, what? Okay, pretty harsh. I think he said something really harsh, like, I don't want to see your face again, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So he's like, well, I guess I'll just do my training at home. And then he's kind of like, I have no fucking equipment. Guess I'll run all day. Not a great plan, because you end up with a cramp.
Yeah, he does the lifts, does like the lifts all day, does his shoulder in. It's not going well. Now, if Leo's going to be hanging around the house all the time, he has to get a job as well. So that's when
Granny suggests, is like, Marty, hey, you could work in my pub.
It's a bar.
It's a fancy bar for fancy people. We don't ask questions. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, there's like he takes for it fairly well. He's a very energetic kind of dude. Ayu, the other hostess there, happy to see him, happy to have a co-worker. She's a nice like a ginky gal girl. Here, take this down to Brian Man, to Brittany down the corner there. And that's when you get set your the pitching alarms to maximum alert.
Yep.
So you have Brittany the acupuncturist, who's a very flamboyantly gay doctor man.
Yeah, I mean, like, at least he gets the thing later on of actually being able to, like, not so much call out your man's illness, because it did, like, oh, you get a bad shoulder, don't you? And your man's like, oh, how did you know? It's like, your friend told me.
It doesn't set the greatest first impression, because
no, bad first
bringing
impression.
The drain down, and you go straight in to grab Leo's ass cheek. I said, oh, Jesus,
you have powerful
again,
legs.
Huh?
And I was just like, yeah, friggin' sexual harassment, gay people will grab your butt. Ha 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 ha. Not really. That wasn't great, but I did like him later on, kind of like actually being a decent acupuncturist and talk about your man about, you know, you can fucking like overwork yourself and therefore come out worse for it. So take some time off. I'll give you some of this acupuncture therapy. We'll work on some Tai Chi to actually like just get you stay fit without actually straining yourself.
Yeah.
Like Ollie's advice is pretty fucking solid, but it's just like very bad introduction.
Yeah. Like Joe Turow is, no, he's been trying to like get back up and running again, but he just can't. As you mentioned, he hasn't got any equipment at home, so you can still jog, I suppose, but as
yeah,
work.
Like having the equipment, having the coach, having the gym and everything there is really important, because obviously he's good at, I mean, like he questions himself, he's good at gymnastics, but obviously he needs someone to train him, because like even his coach said, is like, yeah, you can't go into coaching, you'd be a terrible coach, you have no idea what goes into training.
Yeah. He's trying to do his routines, he tries to do them indoors, and before he even did it, it's like, don't somersault indoors, and he takes out the lampshade.
Yeah. I like, not, I mean, like, this episode didn't look as good as the first one, but I didn't mind not seeing that, because I'm just like, you can see from the way he's standing, he's about to do the flip, and I was like, dude, you're gonna hit the light fixture. Never mind.
You've seen plenty of YouTube videos of teeners buckling themselves while jumping off of houses and stuff. So you know what this looks like.
I was thinking your man at the Krispy Kreme doing the flip.
He also wants to do it like outside, so he wants to go down to the park. He's like kind of, you know, warming up. He's jogging in place and wanting to do things, but then he just sees, he gets subconscious because who's hanging around the park in the middle of the morning here? It's just all of the drunks and
the drunks coming in very late and vagrants.
Like, hey, give me back my vodka.
Yeah, just the weirdos, and like, and he's also a weirdo, and he's like, oh, I'm not sure about this.
Yeah. I just say, when Leo sets him up with the acupuncturist for Brittany, he gets, you know, a better handle on what's actually going on with him, because, you know, he's got a lot of thoughts running on as well about, you know, what his approach to gymnastics has actually kind of been like, has been a rest one for it. That Tai Chi actually helps, because then he can do something outside now in the park, but he's not like flipping around, so he feels a little less subconscious about it. And then,
and he's doing it in a group initially, and just random people joining in, because that's Tai Chi, you can just walk in. Public Tai Chi, I mean. And it's less embarrassing, and it is keeping him fit, but it's not putting a strain on him. It's just like, okay, take a bit of time off from gymnastics so you can work on just giving your muscles a chance to fucking get a break, like, because Brittany was giving him that advice, again, solid advice, unfortunate introduction, but solid advice. He's thinking about his coach going, was like, hey, you need to take some time off, and he's like, no, to win more I need to work harder, and it's just like, yeah, that'll get you broke in gymnastics or fucking any form of life. You just work yourself into an early goddamn grave.
Yeah. At a certain stage, you get diminishing returns on your work. And just keeping that longer will not help. When you feel fucking tired, actually do go down for like a 15-minute, just close your eyes, and you will come back. You'd feel a lot better. Like, have a cup of tea, go take a walk outside, do a lap of the building or something like that. You feel 10 times better than you would if you just kept that. You would actually finish it faster than you would have if you just kept going at it.
Yeah, it's a good, there's a good montage thing as well of him doing all the better exercise, as opposed to the montage of him just fucking it up several days in a row. And I did like the way where Brittany eventually steps off to the side and is just sort of watching them. It's just like, yep, he's good after a few days of doing Tai Chi. He doesn't need instruction anymore. And there's more people joined in at that stage as well.
Yeah. As well, it's about this kind of letting his body rest and kind of repair it. It's also about like letting his spirit rest and repair it. Because he isn't quite figured out where he's at, because he thinks he perceives who he is and why he does gymnastics for. yeah, it said, oh, so it's only about me. I love doing this, and my family are supporting me in it, and I want to keep doing it because I'm good in it. It makes them happy, makes me happy.
Mm.
But he's recognizing more how he's being perceived by others outside of his family, like things like, you know, his coaches, his colleagues and rivals in the sport. We see like news reports of
I'm curious what his daughter thinks, because she's kind of remaining fairly tight-lipped. She seems kind of annoyed at her dad. I'm guessing that he didn't keep her in the loop with this thing that's going on. But yeah, we see all the news reports of him on every channel just going like, hey, this guy, he said some weird shit, and are also talking about this new up-and-coming gymnast. He's going to be the savior of Japanese gymnastics.
Yeah, the bandana prince, Tetsuo Minamino, this very taciturn young lad. You know,
the interview was great. It was like, what do you think about the future of gymnastics? I don't know. How do you plan to improve Japanese gymnastics? Win more. You know, it's just like very fucking
stirring stuff there from Tetsuo Minamino. Back to you in the studio. And Jotaro tries to pull the same thing when he gets ambushed by the media when he's heading into the gym the next day. It's just, he tries to pull the same thing. So, got anything to say? Any more clarification about your supposed retirement?
No.
Really, anything at all? He can't quite hack it.
He's not that kind of personality. He hasn't built up that mystique about himself, so not really working. But yeah, it's him trying to more center, not only like stay fit and everything, but to kind of center himself and figure out what he was doing wrong. And after some sessions of Tai Chi and some sessions of acupuncture, he kind of goes back to his coach, gets down on knees and apologizes, and he's just like, I'm sorry. Could you please take me back? I fucked it up. I really shouldn't have been treated that. I'll listen to every bit of advice. I'm not going to fucking just scoot you off and like hear what you say, but not fucking take it on board from now on.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not just me. I'm putting this on. You know, I'm putting this on like my family, and I'm putting this on you as well, and other people, and also the people who look up to me, because I think I'm just some dude who would have like, who likes doing gymnastics, but others like I'm like the silver medal winner who they look up to and probably inspired them.
I was the hope for Japanese gymnastics for a while, and I stopped being that because I wasn't listening to other people and I wasn't taking what they were saying and what the coach was saying on board. Yeah.
Hmm.
The coach is kind of like, listen, you're old, you're 30, what is he, 30 something? He's old enough anyway.
36, I think.
That's very old for gymnastics. You're old and you're only going to get worse from here. So the best I can do is train you to how to combat this, like the fact that you're just going to steadily degrade as you go on. And it's kind of like, he's taking him back, yay! But as he kind of heads out to the main floor, he's talking to the rapper guy. And he's kind of like, hey, it's like the coach. Oh, I was fired. You know that? And it's like, you weren't fired, dude. The coach was like, hey, he have you heard from him? He didn't sign up for
did
another gym.
Did
he
come in today?
Have you seen him in any of the other gyms? I'm just wondering, like, you know.
you missed Jojo.
He was sweet on him. It's kind of like, yeah, it's the guy he trained. So he cares about him. It's nice.
Yeah. This nice moment is broken then by a door slamming open. He was striding in, but the bandana prince himself, Tetsuo Minamino, the savior of hope for Japanese gymnastics, is coming in and says, Jotaro Arageki, you're a disgrace. What? So, what's this guy's from anime?
I feel like now it's going to be something shit happens to this guy. Something shits on this guy's day at the end of every episode.
Since this
bandana dude is in our opening, I'm guessing he's sticking around for the long term. I didn't enjoy it as much as the first episode, but it is still fairly enjoyable.
Yeah. Not enough Big Bird in it.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
Big Bird, be quiet! I think everybody's going to have to say that over the course of the series. Big Bird, be quiet!
Maybe it'll end in like a final satisfying thing of Big Bird telling other people to be quiet in an appropriate response.
Yeah, and they all in a very valuable lesson.
Dear. Yeah,
but still almost seems to have already gone on. Such as more healing happening in Healing Good Pretty Cure episode 29. Hey. Norica stress, find refreshment. Where Norica is also overworking herself because she is up before the milkman, up before school, is jogging. It's like, you're jogging again early in the morning? From the, yep, gotta be fit, gotta be strong, gotta be healthy. Who knows if you get sick again? And she's stressing herself out. Everyone's worried about her. She's overdoing it. And it's nice, you know, even staying up late enough to catch the drama they're all watching together and can keep talking about it at school. This is juxtaposed then with this girl from one of the other classes who is in the brass band at school, and she's practicing her trumpet out in the playground, on the school grounds. And it's doing it in the morning as well, and it's kind of saying, yo, Nautica, so you're like running around every morning when you get up early, pretty early, I do that, right? But then, yep, gotta be healthy. Like, I see, what are you out for? Yeah, yeah, like I'm kind of falling a bit behind on my trumpet practice, so I gotta, you know, get back up to speed again. And we see the trumpet girl sort of being mildly admonished by the, I guess she's like the student who's at the head of the brass band, kind of cool, like distant, very prim and proper, like student dude. He's like, hey, should be fun practicing outside in the school grounds. It's very disturbing to her. It's like, oh, I'm very sorry about that. And you can kind of tell that she's obviously kind of pushing herself too far as well. Mm. So while the rest of the girls say, no, the cat worried about you. You're going off fucking jogging again. You got to fucking calm down, dude. The fun said, no, no, got to keep going. Got to be healthy. Got to make up for last time. Fun said, no, look, check it out. No. And you see like the band leader and the trumpet girl just like saying, okay, try to practice in a way. And it's just, no, you're not getting quite right there. It's okay. Let's slow down. And then you're kind of getting the same together. That's better. Now, you're always practicing a lot and you're sort of when you're good. It wasn't your fault that, you know, you were sick last week. Someone said, what? Yes, I know. You were homesick with a cold and you missed practice a couple of days. So don't worry about it. Don't feel like you got to be falling behind way too much. Just, like, you'll get up to it in your own time. Just give yourself a break, like. Said trumpet then gets turned into a monster and you gotta fight the monster again. It's like, oh man, she's like, don't just put a mouth on that. That's gross. Could catch something off of that. Gets made bigger immediately. It's Guaiwara, the big musty dumb one behind it this time. He was earlier experimenting. Again, trying to be smart, but now like putting for more of a cooking program angle where if I put more evil mega parts into the stew, make the spicier. Burn the piss off himself. I know, he thinks he's a super genius man. If I put more in, it get bigger, more powerful. So he does that to Trump Monster. It's actually kind of cool because it has this vaguely giant robot look to it. It was made all kind of curling up like brass and trumpet parts and things like that.
I was going to say, does it look like your man out of Big O, the one that was like a musical based one? I can't think of the name of it.
You say Big O, not quite like that, but. I guess it's one of the little valves or anything that's in the trumpets that kind of pops off. It's got also a piston punch.
I see. That. Okay, okay.
Which is pretty cool. So the guys get down to business trying to smack it up. But Nautica's trying to be a hero. She's trying to go off for herself, run into the crossfire, trying to take it out, but trying to do the scans. It's not fucking working. It's like, what are you doing? Pull back. Jesus. Dude, we're a team. You all right, Fun Sate? No, man. I gotta get stronger. I gotta get faster. I gotta get better. Because I got really sick last time. And because of that, one of our arch nemesis drivers in was, like, sprung forth from my body. If I get sick again, like, it might happen again. It could be even worse to you. It's like, dude, you gotta stop beating yourself up about this. It's not your fault you got sick. Mm. Like, you could be like, the healthiest person in the world. Eat your greens every day and fucking don't eat any red meat. You might still get sick with something else. You don't know. This isn't your fault. You got sick. This happens to people. So you guys are overworking yourself. And people around you are worried about you. They're to help you. You can rely on them once in a while. You don't need to be pushing yourself so hard. We're a team. It's nice to have kind of a couple in a row here. Of this like Vedic connected team of, yo, don't work yourself too hard, all right?
that's nearly the theme of the week. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which I can definitely get on board with. I had a couple of days off and I kind of wondered, did I spend that most of our time this time with everyone saying, no, you did. You were fine because I talked to yourself and one of our pals like for ages over the weekend via video calls. She did some gaming stuff. I watched a ton of movies. I've also like, I cleaned the windows of the apartment and also shampooed the carpets and the mattress. The couch even.
Well, that's some practical stuff done. Like modern, a lot of things modern day is like it kind of, it convince you to always be hustling, and you can't. It's not healthy.
I got so much fucking done, like, you know, and I went outside, and, like, I went for, like, a long walks, and I ate well, and I still thinking after all those days off, it's like, did I make the best use of my time? Yes, I did, dummy.
Yeah.
I've had this, like, being, like, hammered home into me, like, over the session of this slate this week. And thinking, yeah, it's just a good lesson to take to heart. So, while it's kind of, it stumble a bit with, yeah, you can, you know, try and recuperate from your illness or manage as best you can. But if you could wave it away with a magic wand, because actually it's demon disease you got. So, you haven't...
Yeah,
why do you
get
demon disease and you still have, I don't know, cystic fibrosis and shit like that? How do you manage that then? And what lesson do you want to impart there? But I suppose to kind of try and find ways around to, you know, get some good meshes out of this.
Yeah, and this, like you say, it makes a lot more sense for them to more so focus on psychological recovery rather than physical recovery, which they can do by magic.
Yeah. And finally, this week, Moriarty the Patriot, episode 2. Scarlet Eyes, Act 1.
Man, this fucking... The chapters of this are up on the first three, I think. I think they're, like, double length on the Shonen Jump app, I think. And I'm so fucking tempted to read it, but I'm just like, okay, let me get a couple of episodes in first. And it's... I am thoroughly enjoying this, though.
Yeah, I read the first one of it, all right, which I actually gave, you know, like most of the backstory related here, which was kind of good. So, oh, I'm up to speed now, and then you can see it. Oh, the next episode is about this exact material as well. So that's a right grand amount on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
So we see the Moriarty brothers, or actually before they were the Moriarty brothers, back in the day. Couple of years ago when
they were little kids. I guess the two blonde boys are younger kids and your man is a teenager at that stage.
William and Lewis, or Louis.
I keep
forgetting now to make note of the pronunciation that they're using.
Yeah, I'll double check. I believe it is Louis, because while they are obviously in England, I'll get to that in a sec, but and their family motto is in French. I believe in myself, I think, or I have faith in myself. I forget. It's one or the other.
Faith in oneself.
Ah, okay. But I did laugh at the opening of this. It was like, Britain, they own a quarter of the world and they are the empire that the sun will never set on. And I was just laughing my ass off because I was just like, time makes fools of us all, I guess.
Ooh.
But obviously, yeah, that's it's talking about empires and empires that pull back and anything like that. Is talking about Japanese stuff as well, to be fair. But
yeah,
I can see where they're kind of going.
But it also similarly to both is... being very admonishing of the
class system. Yeah, which, and that's a
again,
thing that continues in multiple places to this day. So yeah, it is relevant to today as well. Sure.
Yeah. When Japan had its own very strictly structured caste system of its own. But again, it may as well have existed in all but name in Britain as well. Because if you were born into the right family, you're set for life. And most of everything is controlled by like the 3% of the population of the country. Everybody else is just condemned to be dirt poor or next to dirt poor or just be in rags in the street just by the circumstance of their birth and standing in this society.
And this is initially contrasted by... is William the main blonde guy?
William
is the brown-haired fellow.
William was on, and then like Louis is the one with the glasses, and then like Albert, who in we see him here, he's kind of like an older teenager, I suppose, in comparison to the two young lads in this flashback bit.
Our older of the blonde brothers is out and about in town, having a chat with some of the locals, recommending which racehorse could win the race to a couple of guys who were in the papers. Actually, our opening scene is him doing this on the train, and this is kind of our follow-through. Modern him doing it on the train.
Yeah.
And he's advising women on how to keep their plants healthy, flower seller woman, that kind of thing. And everyone just seems to be really happy with him about town, and his older brother with the brown hair offers him a lift back home in the carriage, and... He was paid with like some, I think, roast potatoes, which they look. I was just like, oh man, I could go for a roast.
Change them for biscuits.
Were they biscuits? Okay, I thought they were just like a little newspaper of like roast potatoes, and I was just like, that sounds fucking lovely. You know, when you microwave like just a bunch real quick,
they'd be kind of nice as well. You know,
I get
a hot potato off the straight out of it, just nosh down.
But his brother helps him hide the crime. I'll be complicit in your crime. You know, like I'll help you hide these potatoes because if you get caught at home with them, you'll be in trouble. But as soon as they get home, the butler starts chewing him out. It's like, I can't believe I have to serve someone from a lower class than me. And then, like, the guy who's like, hey, butler, fucking stop it. And he's like, oh, sorry, my lord. Just these little bastards. I hate them so much. Take off that jacket. And it's just like, it's very weird. So you're like, what is this situation that they're in?
And so there's William there, you know, he's, you know, I take off his borrowed finery, he's just down to his scruffy shirt. You got Louis there, you know, who's like scrubbing the steps, he's like coughing, he's getting over a bout of illness. He had the consumption or something, who knows. And Albert was there. I was like, this other kid was like, hey, butler, come on in there, you need to do stuff for me. What's all this commotion out here? And then, oh, my apologies, a master William. It's like, whoa, 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 but he's also William. Did he have two Williams?
So, yeah, we're cutting around a bunch, but basically how it ends up is the Lord Moriarty is trying to impress this woman who is not his wife. She's some lady of a higher station, so I'm guessing he's trying to get in good with her or possibly find a new wife, a new better one. And she's all about charity. Oh, charity is wonderful. And you have this dude who's kind of like, yes, following your example, madam, I will adopt a poor orphan child. To make it look good. And he's kind of like looking back at Moriarty going like, ha, gotcha, fucker. Moriarty's like, of course, I will also adopt two young boys into my household. And he's going actually home to his wife and goes like, you're just going to adopt some random fucking nobodies of what, who knows fucking what breeding from anywhere. And he's just like, yeah, I'm doing it. It's like, you're doing it to impress that woman, aren't you? And he's like, no, I'm doing it because it's charity. So he puts it onto his oldest son. He's like, I don't give a fuck. Just give me some fucking kids who aren't like, who aren't little shits, who won't fucking embarrass me. And Albert regularly.
You're always going to the ragged school. You always got some interest in that. Yeah. Just give me two kids out of there. What can't you?
One of the charities the Moriarty family does do is this set up this. It's just called the Raggedy Orphanage or something, isn't it?
It's a ragged school, and they were a natural institution in 19th century Britain. They were just it's basically just like a school that homeless or orphan children could go to and get some modicum of education at.
Modicum of education, probably like a bit of a scrubbed up thing, that so that they won't end up just destitute or anything. And while they do fund this, it's considered really weird for our eldest Moriarty son to kind of visit it regularly. He likes reading to the kids. But there's this new kid there who all the kids are like, hey, can you help us out with these problems and stuff? And they're all like really hanging off this guy. And I was like, how unusual. A child who loves to go to the library and read. Apparently that's what he and his brother did when they were on the street. He just go to the British Library and read a shitload of books. And he's quite knowledgeable, more knowledgeable than a bunch of the teachers there.
Yeah. It turns out it was at Albert. I don't want to call him Albert. I got some I suppose kind of Monte Cristo on my brain right now. Anyways, Albert, I suppose we actually be called. He's as you say, unusual for nobility in that he fucking hates this country.
He sees the caste system and he sees the way his younger brother William treats the staff, the servants. Apparently, he seemed to stab one of the fucking maids in the hand because she served tea poorly or something.
Well,
and she's not going to call him out because it's like, I'll have Father fire her tomorrow. And he's just like, these people are fucking disgusting. They tend to be like, oh, I'm of a higher class of person. I deserve to rule, but they don't fucking act like it. And he can see this this fucking bullshit that the entire world is built on, and he hates it.
Yeah, I hate my younger brother. I wish that the other child, you know, who was reading everybody and advising about mathematics and the sciences was my younger brother. Wait a minute.
Yeah, hired by the dad. Or, like, the dad doesn't give a fuck who the fuck he gets as long as it doesn't embarrass his family. So he goes, like, I'll get these two brothers. They seem pretty cool. But as he's visiting the orphanage one day, he's catching them. Oh, he's down in the church giving the children a lecture on something. And he's just like, oh. And remember, children, what do we want to do to the lords? If lords are good people because they were of a higher class, and one of the kids is like, yeah, but there's sometimes bad lords and they look down on me or they spit on me or something like that, and those are bad people from the upper class, and what do we do with those children? And there's like, kill
the bougies.
And your man's kind of disturbed to hear this, but it more disturbing, he's like, yeah, fucking kill them. He's also convinced by this wonderful lecture, as I think he refers to it later.
Well, he sees what sort of make that this young lad is as well, this this young, vaguely sinister blind child is. Because as well, he's spoken about, oh, as a kind of child, what the things he says, you can stun an adult into silence. They will be dumbfounded about what to say or do with them.
Mm.
And because one time he's like, do some kind of calculations, drawing in the dirt for a bunch of this.
Fully grown men. Dudes. Yeah, yeah. And he's just like, if you're trying to dig 40 feet, then you'd want to do it about this rate, and you should 40 yards. You'd basically have it done in a week, working at this kind of conditions. And they're all just like, And then the Lord Watsy's face comes over, and they're like, yeah, we got to get out of here, whatever. I mean, like, it's not a place for us. So they're kind of scruffing over the calculations. And he's kind of like, oh, sorry, did I disturb the lecture you're helping those guys with? And the kid's like, no, we had the basic stuff done. I like,
he's walking through town then.
But his little speech, where he's like, I like to help people out because it's better than them like falling into a life of crime or something. So if I can help them, that's fantastic.
Yes.
And like maybe a week or something like that later, he's walking through town and it's like, oh, can you believe they robbed the vault? And it's like, well, it was no mean feat to dig 40 yards. And he's like,
yeah,
son,
there was
an
old man Thompson safe though. We know he got that money from robbing it off of poor people and taking it off for himself. So he had it coming, really.
And he's like, oh shit, put two and two together based off what he'd heard. It's like, he was telling them how to rob a thing, but without anyone getting hurt. So confronting him back in the orphanage, I heard that speech you were doing the other day.
You were there.
And
well, it's just the way it is now. I mean, this country is infested with devils. And while the devils exist themselves, you know, and they're evil in their own way, just their very presence, you know, it corrupts and twists the hearts and needs of everybody around them, you know. So surely it would be a better world if we were to do away with these devils, you know, and cast them out so everybody could live in peace and harmony in paradise.
And,
wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, his internal monologue is something along the lines of, it's just like, he's taking on the sin of, like, fucking up the bourgeois, the evil people, so that then the world will actually be better, and he's going to take on all that crime and sin for himself in order to make a world better. And he's like, that's a really fucking good idea. But he's thinking this in a very shocked face of, like, my entire worldview has been flipped upside down. Sometimes you can do evil things for good purposes. And as he's doing this, the other brother is sneaking up behind him with a knife just in case, I guess.
Yes. Want me to shank him, bro?
Yeah, that's actually, that's not where we leave it out, because where we leave it out
it
is
cuts to some point.
I thought this was a great idea for the world. I just wanted this simple thing, just one simple thing, and it's like, I didn't think it was going to go that way. The
mansion burning.
The Moriarty mansion is burning down, and three boys escape from it, and they're like, "Who are you, boys?" And it's like, "Well, it's me, the first oldest brother, and these guys." And it's like, oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah.
So we're going to see how that's set up, I assume, next episode.
Mm.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
This, yeah, get to see like our opening sequence as well, which, you know, is laden with
Pretty
stuff
Boys?
To come. Yeah, we get to see what's
Pretty Sherlock name? And...
Henley?
He's two...
The henchmen.
The two Moriarty henchmen from the books, yeah. But we do see a Pretty Sherlock and Watson as well. So
kind of boy detective Watson. He's very young and boyish, I think.
That guy has not been in the army.
little drummer boy or something like that.
It's definitely got the longer hair Holmes thing. I can see that they're going off the BBC version for that. Which I'm fine with. It's grand.
Yeah. Also, hopefully promises lots of like some like cool gun and knife fights in ivy covered graveyards. I can dig that.
If we can halfway deliver on some of the cool action set pieces it's doing, I'll be delighted. This show is kind of delivering on its promise, really.
Yeah, I was fun eating this up. Because I would share a lot of the same viewpoints. It's just, yeah, kill the fucking notions. Fuck them. They don't do nothing, so what used to be?
That's the temptation, though, to fall into further evil in order to do a good thing, which is kind of like, is that evil? Yeah, yeah. And it's tipping into very real world things happening right now. That's a very tempting philosophy for a lot of folks right now. And I mean, like, throughout history, I suppose, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, more so, it's nice that it's pointing out, you know, the fucking inherent fallacy,
the hypocrisy of it all, yeah,
society, the hypocrisy of it, and how, like, this is from back in the 19th century, and a lot of these fucking trains of thought are still present and alive today, for over a century later, a century and a half later, almost, and it's one very obvious. It's been delivered to you in different ways, and you're told it's different things, but it is the exact same shit and served up with the same fucking cold diarrhea from a fucking century and a half ago. You made us fun swallow in the present day.
Yeah, and it's probably going to point out it's fun. I mean, like, probably, maybe I'm fucking wrong, but eventually they'll go like, hey, sometimes, like, just like it, maybe they go a little too far in the show, but I mean, like, still the kind of the suggestion that they're having is like, eat the rich. Maybe, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Which side the kind of show comes down on.
Yeah, it was interesting as well that just based on what young William Moriarty, the fake one, not the really mean other one who was probably going to die in a house fire in the next episode. how it seems to be bringing in the Catholic figures. They think of something that Moriarty in the books, he had like a Catholic upbringing, that seems to be like taking elements of that in, where it's just like, I see my consultancy business as this ultimate battle between good and evil.
I will do evil in order to prevent evil. Yeah.
I will do evil to do good, you know, and seeing it in simple terms as like, yes, these are people who are beyond reproach. They are literal devils in my eyes, and I must cast them out.
Yeah, it's a very I was gonna say fucking old-fashioned view of Christianity and Catholicism, but I'm like, nah, a lot of people fucking still think like that. That they're put here by God in order to punish the evildoers and that kind of fucking bollocks.
Yeah, you know, I see what you mean by the temptation, though. It's just like, yeah, if somebody comes, this is a fucking problem, go away from me. But like, what does that make me then?
Does it corrupt? I imagine that's going to be one of the questions it's talking about.
Just to see so many fucking people like escape any kind of consequence for their heinous actions repeatedly over time, and nothing has done about it. So it's like, you are not going to learn a thing about this. So why are you not fucking clapped in irons right this second? There was like, this has been a banner year for people. I have a mental list of people that I don't want to see or hear another headline about unless they are dead, in prison, or both.
Yeah. And you have the constant rhetoric put by some decent, or maybe even half decent, left-leaning people who are kind of like, if they punch down, you don't punch up. You remain strong and play by the rules, even though they're going to break every single one of those fucking rules and remove your ability to benefit from those rules, actually make it fucking worse for you. Like, always fucking punch up.
Punch up, get them right in the balls.
I imagine the show is going to be somewhat satisfying for those kind of themes at the very least. But again, just really good. It's a good period piece, but one that applies to now. So an even more relevant period piece. Yeah.
And it still looks very attractive. It's nicely framed and directed.
Yes.
Keeps that going here. It's building up. That's very sinister atmosphere. Fun. He's obviously, you know, helping all his people, but there's something really off about him all the time. It does a really good job of like conjuring unease when there are any scenes involving or fake but soon to be real William James Moriarty.
It maintains that atmosphere of menace, especially with how he's framed and how that's set up. Very, very well done show. Thoroughly enjoying it. Looking forward to more.
Yeah.
Really good season this season, but fuck it, it's been like real good ones for quite some time now. So always nice to see that. I think Brian said he was watching someone's like top 20 anime that are happening right now or something like that. And only one of the shows was one we were watching. So it's like, there's always lots.
Really?
There's lots of good things on at all times. I mean, like, maybe not to everyone's taste, but there's got to be something out there for you. And
I suppose there's enough of it.
There's still a decent amount of stuff. Ongoing things is, I think, the thing that catches us a bunch, because we often drop ongoing things like, oof, that's too long, I'm going to step out of that.
No. Seems like a manageable enough amount. I'm fairly happy with this. Yeah. So I'll go with this much right now. This feels right about it. I think that's everything that's come out now. Also, Matsu was a new addition there. But again, as I said, feels like just putting on a comfortable pair of slippers again.
Yeah, so. yeah, yeah.
This thing keeps the quality up, you know. I don't want it to be going in circles again.
For sure.
Like, I can't with that. But anyways, that's all other stuff that will happen about in the future when we have Brian back on.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on with us in the meantime? A Secret Instead of Madness, where we're looking forward to having Anthony Askew, which is Anthony Askew, the very same one. I'll talk about some Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island, which I watched last night, and it was tons of fun.
Yeah, I think I said the last day, it's like, hey, the Hex Girls, and I was like, wait, that's the next Scooby-Doo movie, so apologies if I set you up for that.
well, that's still, I'm just looking forward to that whenever we get around to watching that Scooby-Doo and the Witch's Ghost.
Yeah, the Witch's Ghost, the Witch's Curse, I can't remember which one it's called. I can't remember which was which. We got some Zombie Island going, and that'll be fun to talk about for a spooky Halloween type podcast.
Excellent. Otherwise, we'll be back here next week with more of the same, hopefully, Brian.
Mm.
So until next time, goodbye. Ta-ta. Adios. In case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Hope you get better soon, Brian.
It wasn't that bad. God.